Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. All this week ahead of Juneteenth on Saturday, we're talking about underreported stories from Black history. Today, we'll take a closer look at an event that destroyed a prosperous Black community 100 years ago this month and inflicted trauma on generations of survivors and descendants. In 1921, a mob of white supremacists with the approval of law enforcement terrorized and destroyed the affluent Black neighborhood of Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Most historians who have studied the event estimate the death toll to be between 75 and 300 people, according to a recent article from the Associated Press. Known as the Tulsa Race Massacre, it is one of the worst incidents of racial terror and violence in the 20th century and 20th century American history. A new 6-episode podcast called Blindspot Tulsa Burning explores the history and legacy of Oklahoma's Greenwood District and the Tulsa Race Massacre. We hear from historians, descendants of survivors, community activists, and generations of Tulsans, many of whom didn't learn about the massacre until recently. Blindspot Tulsa Burning is a co-production of the History Channel and WNYC Studios in collaboration with KOSU and Focus Black Oklahoma. The first 3 episodes are available to listen now. New episodes are released every Friday through July 2nd. I'm glad that WNYC producer and host Kalalea can join us now. Kalalea, welcome.
Thank you, Allison. How are you today?
I'm well. The podcast series, you know, the idea is that it looks at blind spots in our history and in memory. What did you want to find out specifically about the Tulsa Massacre?
Oh, wow. Well, how something like that could happen, I think that was one of the biggest questions. And how come the people who committed those crimes were not held accountable? Mm-hmm. I think those were the biggest questions going in for me. Also, who were these people? Who were the people who were there in Greenwood, who were woken up in the middle of the night, who had to leave their homes, who lost family members? Who were those people and what were they like?
Now that you know what you know, what has been missing from the way the Tulsa Race Massacre has been recorded in history?
Well, I think one thing, even in the introduction, I know we've had several different introductions, but even just hearing that white supremacists were the ones who went into Greenwood and destroyed and burned Greenwood is not entirely correct. It is partly accurate, but I think what's missing is that these were also just your average white people. These were Tulsans, white Tulsans. These were Tulsans who were white that were other from other neighboring counties and areas around Oklahoma who had come in to Greenwood by the morning of June 1st, 1921. So I think one of the biggest myths is that there were just the Klan, mm-hmm. or Klan-like or Klan-adjacent organizations that did this. But that's not the case. That's not true. It was all types of, white people. That was one of the biggest things I think that's missing. Also, the amount of wealth that was stolen and lost. A lot of times there's a great deal of focus on the burning and the bombing of the buildings, of property, of homes. But there was also a systematic, almost very coordinated looting of people's homes before they were set on fire, before they were burned down and bombed. People went in with some of them sacks, or they would take pillowcases from the homes and fill them with personal property, anything from jewelry, furs, piggy banks, break open safes, people's, you know, personal safes where they kept their money, because a lot of people, especially Black people in that time, did not trust banks to hold their money. So they had all of their life savings, all of their cash at home with them. And those valuables and those things, including things as large as grand pianos, phonographs, were taken from the home and loaded on trucks.
My guest is Kalalea. We're talking about Blind Spot, Tulsa Burning, the podcast that she hosts and has helped produce. So there's a version of the story that's been told that begins on May 30th, 1921, in an office building in Tulsa. What do we know about what happened that day?
Well, we really don't know that much, to be honest. I mean, we know that there's this office building, the Drexel, and that there was a shoe shiner, a young Black 19-year-old teenager named Dick Rowland, and that he had been, actually, I think it was off, the city was off that day, but he needed to use the restroom, and one of the Black, you know, they called them colored restrooms, was located on in the Drexel building. And so he got on that elevator, which was being operated that day by a 17-year-old young woman, a white woman named Sarah Page. And it's not entirely clear, because only they were there. There's a rumor, or there's the myth, is that he got on the elevator and it wasn't leveled, and therefore he tripped and grabbed her arm or her clothing or touched her, and she screamed, and he ran out, and somebody saw them and accused him, saw, you know, what happened but couldn't catch him, and accused him of sexual assault.
How do we get from that moment to an entire neighborhood being destroyed?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's the question, I think. What I feel, what I'm seeing in the research, is that it was going to happen. It was bound to happen at any point. And that the city of Tulsa, the Oklahoma National Guard, the police and sheriff's office were all prepared and ready for this. I think it was just a matter of time. And at that point, there had been a surge of lynchings throughout the country, but also in Tulsa. And it just took people, once they arrested Dick Rowland that following morning, that was May 31st, then once he was being held in that courthouse, a large group of what they, you know, referred to as lynch mobs, large groups of white people, men, women, and children, were outside and waiting and calling for the lynching of Dick Rowland, this young man. And that caused a fight, because Black men who had just returned from war had weapons on them, and they were determined not to let them lynch another Black person, or a Black person, on that day. And, you know, they succeeded, because Dick Rowland was probably one of the few people that made it out alive, from what I understand. Yeah.
So we learned in the first episode that a lot of the story of the Tulsa Race Massacre has been sort of strategically removed from archives and public records. What was it like for you as a journalist trying to put this story together?
Well, it's funny. I think I didn't realize it until speaking to a professor, Professor Boyd, actually Herb Boyd, that here in New York, he was telling me about many, many years ago, decades ago, where he was in Muskogee, Oklahoma, and he went to the library there, and the actual newspaper, like, there were sections of the newspaper clipped out when he was trying to research the Tulsa Race Massacre. And that just really stuck with me. I mean, that was very early on in, like, doing, like, pre-interviews. And that stuck with me. And then I definitely, when I started to call research centers throughout Tulsa primarily, I've called, you know, a handful of research centers looking for particular articles or descriptions of events that happened around that period. Not just around the massacre, but other events, racial events of racial terrorism. And they would say, oh, we don't have that issue, or that's not in our microfilm, or that's missing, or we only have these issues from that month, but not the ones you're asking for. So yeah, it was a bit surprising, but I had been forewarned, you know? Yeah.
At the time, the governor of Oklahoma called for an investigation. What happened as the result of that investigation?
Very little, actually. I mean, there were some people, white people, who were called in into the police, you know, the police department, but they weren't held for any length of time. They weren't indicted. Actually, about 60 people were indicted, and all of those 60 people were black, who were indicted for inciting a riot. So that was also part of the investigation. What else happened? Martial law was declared in Tulsa, and bodies were being removed or buried very quickly. There was a ban on funerals, on black funerals, but not white funerals. The investigation itself, there was I want to say it's the sheriff, Gustavin. I'm blanking on his name right now, but he actually was arrested or held for a bit of time and charged, but he didn't serve any amount of time for negligence or incompetence on his part. He was pretty much like back to work in like a couple of months. Yeah.
The name of the podcast is Blind Spot Tulsa Burning. I'm speaking with its host, Kalalea. So you spoke with descendants of massacre survivors. There's one who gives a tour of Greenwood called the Real Black Wall Street Tour. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about him, and then we'll listen to a clip from one of his tours.
Oh, yeah. I love Chief Amashan. I mean, he is such a passionate person. He's very lively and gregarious. He has been an activist and pretty much dedicated his life to, you know, seeking out justice for the survivors, the known survivors, and their descendants. So he's a wonderful person. He's extremely busy. He has, you know, the tour, but he's also the president of the African Ancestral Committee or organization there in Tulsa, which involves a great deal. And he's phenomenal.
Let's take a listen to him where he explains what he wants people to learn from his The Real Black Wall Street Tour.
One of the reasons we named it The Real Black Wall Street Tour is because there were other tours taking place, but they were watered down. I wanted it to be so tangible that you felt like you were living the experience as I tell the story. Right. I wanted you to be able to smell Greenwood. I wanted you to be able to hear the music on Greenwood. I wanted you to be able to smell the burning on Greenwood. I want you to have a total holistic experience.
You could go do any and everything within walking distance in the Greenwood district. Most people have no idea that the original Cotton Club was right here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The
one in New York. We start right in the core, in the heart of Greenwood. And I show people what was and what is no more.
This is the location of the Stratford Hotel. In 1918, this was declared the crown jewel of hotels in the United States of America, owned by a black man.
I take them to the places where bodies were dumped. I take them to the home of Wyatt Tate Brady, the city founder, Klansman.
He said, yes, I'm a member of the Klan. I'm a proud member of the Klan. So is my father a member of the Klan.
So that they can see that he built a home that is the replica of Robert E. Lee. I take them to Standpipe Hill.
So they occupied these hills and fought for their lives.
The battleground location where black men fought to defend Greenwood. This explains why it was necessary to bomb Greenwood. Because it was a losing battle on the ground.
That's from the podcast Blind Spot Tulsa Burning. So I think a lot of people, some people may think, okay, I know what Tulsa is. I know what's happened there. But I think in your podcast, we learn so much about context and the context of Greenwood. And I wanted you to explain the connection between Tulsa, the establishment of Greenwood, this Black Wall Street, and the resettlement of Native Americans during Andrew Jackson's Trail of Tears.
Yes. So, oh gosh, that's a lot, Allison.
I know it's a big question, but it's so interesting.
Yeah. So, there is a, you know, huge Native American population in what is now Oklahoma. You're right. President Andrew Jackson in 1830, basically signed this treaty where it sent or displaced the five Native American tribes, the Choctaw, Chickasaw, Seminole, Cherokee, and Muscogee Creek nations. And their arrival to that area, which was called Indian Territory at the time, was a pivotal moment. I mean, it changed the landscape. Their communities were built up. They were already very established. They had political systems. They had their own schools. They created all of this. But one thing that people don't know, and I don't know if I want to spoil this about the freedmen. If you haven't listened to,
give a hint.
Yeah. So they weren't alone. Essentially, mm-hmm. the Native American tribes that traveled along the Trail of Tears that were forcibly removed, they were not alone. They had enslaved a group of people, and those people were with them. And over time, when oil was discovered in that area, in what is now Oklahoma, that land that was once the five tribes and were relegated to were basically seen as much more valuable, right? Mm-hmm. And now the white settlers and the government wanted that land back. So they had allotted land to Native people, but then realized, no, we're going to pull back on some of these restrictions. We're going to encourage them to have their own individual land allotments. So we'll give them individual land allotments. And that included the enslaved people that were with them, as well as the Native, population. And that brought about a good amount of wealth, where people it was almost like their own version of 40 acres and the mule there for the Native and Black populations that were there at the time. And that allowed people to slowly move towards Tulsa as oil was, being discovered and people were drilling for oil all over. The wealth was growing, and mainly for white people, Black people, Native people were kept from the oil industry. But it didn't mean that they couldn't work as laborers or they didn't work as domestic workers. And the pay was pretty good for a domestic worker at the time. And that allowed people to invest in Greenwood, mm-hmm. which the founders were really had very explicitly declared that they would only sell to people of African descent or Black people there in Tulsa. So these few Black founders of Greenwood essentially mm-hmm. only sold land to Black people, and that land and that wealth might not have come if it hadn't been for the Native American population mm-hmm. and the land allotments and the Dawes Act and the Curtis Act.
You will learn a lot by listening to Blind Spot Tulsa Burning. I've been speaking with its host, Kalalea. Kalalea, thank you so much for being with us, and we look forward to the rest of the series.
Thank you so much, Allison, for having me. Have a great day.
Thanks. And that is all of it for this hour. I'm Allison Stewart. I'll meet you after the news.